Let's go. Come on.
Hi, it's Nathaniel. Don't get too excited. The podcast is still just showing up whenever it shows up. But I am happy to report that the old gang is back together, at least briefly, for this one-off. And we're just discussing Oscar, as we do. We begin in mid-conversation with Katie and Nick talking about Miss Myrna's tips in The Help.
I'm very intrigued by the matchstick trick, by the way. I could not believe that that worked, Nick.
I couldn't either. And, like, I was talking to people all day on the phone on Christmas with this thing between my teeth, but I was so proud of it, I wouldn't take it out.
Wait, what are you... I'm missing this.
So when Emma Stone is, like, getting her Miss Myrna advice from Viola at the beginning, and she's like, how do you chop onions without crying? And she's like, that's an easy one. Just keep a matchstick between your teeth. So, of course, I did that because everything I do I learned from the movies, and it totally works, you guys.
Wow.
That's awesome. And then you fried your Christmas dinner in Crisco, and you were all set.
And I said to Derek repeatedly, like, this is so much fun! So I fried
the fish. Shake that. Chicken already dead, Missy. Yep, he dead.
Try that, like, crushed eggshells to get the grease out of your tablecloth, and at that point, I'm full-on Abilene. So let that be a lesson to everybody. You need to watch The Help one extra time just for the fucking advice. It's in there.
That's your Miss Abilene column.
That's right, exactly. I'm going to change the name of my domain.
So this is our first podcast of the entire award season, guys.
It is, but don't get used to it because clearly we can't get it together.
How are you
it's
guys?
It's a reunion!
This is so exciting.
Way to be spontaneous, people.
I was actually talking to Nick on the phone and we saw you and Joe conversing, Katie, on Twitter. And we were like, oh my god, we're all online at the same time.
That was me just talking smack about it. Predictions where I just had no reason to really.
Well, but I like the fact that we can just on a random Tuesday, is everybody online? All right, we're doing this thing. And it's like, I raced to find my headphones. I was like, I gotta go.
Yeah. I'm at my parents' house still, and there's actually stairs in this house. I'm like my apartment, so I had to run down the stairs to get my, you know, get the plug. It was a lot of work.
Yeah, yeah.
Compared to being in a tiny apartment.
I love everybody's breaking a sweat to do a podcast.
I know. I downloaded Skype so fast. I was like, wait, what's my Skype name? I got to remember my Skype name.
Because people haven't heard us in a year.
Yeah.
I'm Nathaniel from The Film Experience.
I'm Joe from doesn't post as much in low resolution as he should anymore and also has a Tumblr and is also on Twitter.com.
Wow, that's a really long URL.
I know, it's really ungainly. That's no wonder I don't get any traffic.
Hello, I'm Nick. I'm at nicksflickpicks.com, mostly, sometimes.
And Katie.
And I'm at cinemablend.com, pretty often, actually. So, you know, you guys should take a lesson from me.
And her URL is much shorter.
It is.
So, because we haven't talked, we haven't, like, literally no topic is overworked by us.
I have to say, now that I'm among friends, I have to admit that yesterday I made on a piece of actual paper with an actual pen a list of all of the 2011 movies that I still need to see.
Such and a Luddite.
And it took the entire front of a page still. And, like, I will say I've already knocked off a couple, but I still have to see, like, Dragon Tattoo and Iron Lady and Albert Nobbs, the last two which are waiting for me on screeners back in New York once I get back. So that'll be a double feature to be had.
My parents keep asking me about the Iron Lady. It's literally the one screener I didn't bring back home with me, and I can't believe it's the one that they want to see. Because I haven't seen it yet, and I just don't want to. I don't want to do it.
I'm really curious to see, though, how it turns out, because it just looks, and everything I've heard about it is just terrible, but it looks like it's everything we feared, right? It's everything we feared from Meryl Streep stars in the Margaret Thatcher biopic directed by the lady who did Mamma Mia.
Well, I was just talking to Nick about this actually before we were all recording. I will say that Felita has learned what a camera is since
hey.
Mamma Mia.
Hey, that's hey. Good.
But unfortunately, she has also learned to tilt it for dramatic effect.
Well, it's good to know that King's Speech Oscar didn't go for nothing.
It's all extreme
well,
close-ups.
Well,
he didn't
say that their heads are all in the corners. Come on.
That trailer, and I know they like tinkered with the trailer a few times. Tinker trailer, soldier street. That line about the Falkland Islands, that really felt to me like, oh, they tried to make it a comedy, but they're trying to sell it as a sort of historical lady power drama. Nathaniel, you've seen it, right?
I have seen it, yeah.
Nick, have you seen it? Or is...
I have not, but if they'd called it Lady Power, I would have.
but is that the case, Nathaniel? Like,
Well, like Nick brilliantly put some years ago in an article about our first lady of acting.
Yes.
She is above all else an entertainer.
Yeah.
Even if she has a purely dramatic role like this one, she will throw in comic beats for the fans.
Which I appreciate.
Right. So, and it's made her very beloved, but it does make for some, you know, tonally curious things.
Hadn't you been saying it kind of hurt the movie and the performance, like the way that it was trying to work with, you know, the actual character?
What it ends up doing is it makes Maggie, you know, really lovable. And, you know, that wasn't the first adjective people would use to describe Margaret Thatcher.
So is the Iron Lady going to matter at all beyond maybe getting Meryl Streep the win?
I mean, I could see possibly makeup and costumes.
I still don't think she's going to get the win, though.
I think she might.
This doesn't... I mean, it's performing so much better than I thought it would. She's doing so much better with critics than I thought she would. So I'm clearly not the one to go by. This still doesn't feel like win number three to me. I still feel like Viola Davis is going to end up pulling it out.
But, I just feel like I was just saying to Nathaniel, I feel like we're getting the Kate Winslet 08 vibe of like, okay, I'm not losing again. Fuck you all. I will do an accent. I will do comedy. I will do drama. I will go abroad. This will be a biopic. I'm on the cover of Vogue. Give me that shit I want.
I put my Emily Safer to my goddamn farm in Massachusetts.
Exactly. And then you don't have to nominate me again.
Yeah. I'll leave you all alone from now on.
The enthusiasm surrounding the other contenders has sort of abated a bit.
I think
hopes might push Viola Davis back up again if she wins or if the help...
People really love the hard sell in Best Actress, especially for whatever reason.
Yeah. But I do feel like Meryl hasn't sort of told everybody, okay, this year, honestly, you need to vote for me, until it feels like this year we are kind of getting the message that, like, look, people.
Yeah, I don't want to lose a 14th time in a row or whatever it is.
Has it surprised you guys to see, like, the young women kind of, like, Elizabeth Olsen seemed out of the conversation, Rooney Mara seems to kind of not be able to pull it off. I kind of assumed at least one of them would get in there, and it doesn't seem like it's happening.
No, I want to do the statistics on it, but I just haven't had the time yet, but yeah. I think it's going to be the oldest lineup.
Really? Even with Michelle Williams in there?
Well, I mean, she would be the youngest by far, and and she's in her 30s, so...
Yeah. And especially if Glenn Close is able to muscle her way in, which I don't think she is at this point, but she's close. She's close.
why don't you post more often?
I'm out of here, people. I'm leaving on a high note. I don't get how Elizabeth Olsen keeps getting left off of these lists. Like,
Well, I think it boils down to people don't like the movie.
Which is...
I mean, I love the movie, but it seems to be off-putting to a lot of people.
I guess. And I mean, to compare it to Winter's Bone is kind of, like, you know, easy because of the John Hawkes thing and because of the sort of, you know, brand new, ingenue kind of thing. But I do feel like Winter's Bone had similar detractors, I felt. I don't know. It just surprises me that there wasn't more... hay made about this, like, you know, this exciting new actress, because I think it's even among the people who didn't like the film, I feel like they liked her performance. I don't know, the fact that, like, she was getting beat out for breakthrough actress by Felicity Jones really made me mad, because
or when J.C. Shandor started winning all those best new director prizes, like, that just seemed like really like really deliberate backlash against that movie.
If not deliberate backlash, then just sort of everybody sort of rounding up the troops to support someone who wasn't getting attention before the Critics Awards, which I could sort of see. I didn't get the Felicity Jones thing at all, I will have to say.
Yeah, I didn't either.
I mean, I would have gone for the Pariah Girl over either one of them, but I don't know. I mean, like, I would definitely put Elizabeth Olsen down on, like, a most charismatic and most interesting face list, but I didn't feel like the performance she was giving really... I mean, there was nothing wrong with it. I didn't dislike it, but it didn't, like, she registered with me more in terms of, like, I'm interested to see her do more work. She was right. Really kind of gripping than thinking that there was a whole person there, or even, like, the degree of a person that movie wants, which might not be a whole person. But I do think Rooney Mara is going to get the spot that Tilda Swinton has been taking in a lot of the precursor lists. I don't see a lot of Academy screeners or Academy members popping that particular screener in. I mean, the Kevin has, like, hung in there for SAG and for the Globes and all that stuff. I've just been kind of surprised.
Yeah, it's gotten a lot of support that I wouldn't have expected it to get, from corners that I wouldn't have expected it to get, which is making me more optimistic about it. But I do feel like Dragon Tattoo is poised to be that kind of late-breaking.
On the other hand, it is also not completely Rooney Mara's movie, Dragon Tattoo.
Yeah.
I mean, and I do think that's a problem if you're trying to be somebody who's late-breaking.
Yes.
But she is getting the reviews that are, even the people who are cool on the movie seem to be singling her out as pretty captivating.
Right, but it's still, like, it takes you... I'm sure I'm exaggerating because I didn't like the movie very much, but it feels like it takes a full hour before it really clicks in.
Of the 3.5-hour running time that it has?
For her, for anything, because it seems like it takes a full hour before she's actually acting opposite of Daniel Craig.
I see.
I'm confused why you're debating with me about a movie that you've seen and I haven't. I don't know why you won't just listen to what I'm saying.
Such is the way of Oscar season.
Yeah. That's true.
How did that movie
we all have opinions on War Horse?
It's like the Team Margaret thing, only writ large over 70 movies.
Yeah.
People are always arguing about things they haven't seen.
That movie has got to stick around at least until I'm back in New York. This can't happen to me twice. God forbid I make it all about me, about issues of seeing Margaret, because nobody else does that ever. Now you're out of town, and here I am.
Well, the
you're
fun.
Ed Benning and Margaret is Hillary Swank. Now you know how to
feel. Yes, exactly.
This thing about taking it personally with the movies really fits well with Margaret itself.
Oh, does it?
Because the whole narrative is sort of about Anna Paquin trying to make everything about herself.
Nice.
Yeah.
Have you
seen it, Katie? Anna Paquin. Yeah, I have. I saw it. They did like 2 critic screenings right before it opened, and I managed to get my way into one of those. Mm-hmm. And it has been like, I saw it with people who were less into it, and I kind of was arguing in favor of it. And then watching the whole Team Margaret thing has been really fascinating. Although I guess it has nothing to do with the Oscar race. I think, Nathaniel, you said you understand the existence of Team Margaret, but you're not on Team Margaret.
Yeah. I mean,
I think I feel similar to you.
I liked the movie a lot, and I think it has a lot of interesting beats and, you know, things we haven't seen in movies every year.
Yeah.
But it also feels really incomplete to me, which is, I know, is not a revolutionary thing to say about a movie plagued with editing trouble. I kept wanting it to coalesce in a way that it obviously wasn't going to.
Yeah. I'm kind of heartened by the idea that the critics are once again rallying behind a movie just so it will be seen.
Right.
I feel like in this day and age, there's been that's hardly ever been a concern. I think we had to get to a point where, like, a studio and a director were so at odds that there was an actual concern that people wouldn't get to see the movie. I still feel like it is going to get a DVD release, but I feel like if there was any question about it, then better that Team Margaret exists. That
Oh, for sure, yeah.
And that these Critics Awards, they do help and they do sort of illustrate that, you know, critics can still shine a light on things, even in this era where everything is accessible by everyone.
Well, the whole thing that makes me so crazy about Critics Awards, though, is that they so often blow that chance to be advocates.
Yeah.
Because
they've been a lot better this year, I will have to say. They've been a lot more diverse, at least.
Yeah, and that's true.
I said a couple weeks ago, I was like, if only this had happened in a year when I was more enthusiastic about more of the movies that they're being diverse about. Like, this year it's, you know, it's The Artist and it's Hugo and it's Moneyball and The Descendants, and I don't really feel strongly about any of those.
I feel like you don't really have a horse in the race this year.
Well,
like, kind of whoever wins. definitely
close
not
to have one.
I saw War Horse yesterday, and I will say that it's not, I mean, this is not brilliant piece of filmmaking. I really, really enjoyed it, though, and I really feel like it's Spielberg-y in the ways that he can get away with that not everybody else can get away with, and maybe I'm sort of giving him a little extra leeway, but that's fine. I if this ends up being the movie that wins Best Picture, though, I feel more warmly towards it than I do towards Hugo and The Artist, and that's more of a statement of my tepid feelings on the other two.
Are you speaking English right now?
Sorry.
How? I just don't. I don't get the War Horse thing.
Is this about to turn into Carnage?
I will throw up on all three of you.
I War Horse to me feels like something that, like, it's interesting that you bring up that you're giving Spielberg more leeway, but it feels like a movie to me that absolutely no one would back if it wasn't Steven Spielberg. He gets so much rope all the time for things that people actually find repulsive in other filmmakers. And I don't understand why it's automatic cause for love if Spielberg gets, you know, sentimental and schmaltzy. And that if other people do it, like the amount of vitriol, for example, that Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close is getting.
Yeah.
To me, that's less sentimental than War Horse.
But that's all subject matter and what it's about and what it's being sentimental about.
Sure.
That I feel like you're not going to get that kind of knee-jerk stuff from World War One. I feel like Spielberg wields sentiment in a way that other filmmakers, if they did it, then I would feel like they were just trying to be Spielberg, and I wouldn't like it as much.
Like Hugo?
Yeah, like Hugo.
Well, I know, Nick, you're cool on War Horse, right? Or on Hugo. I mean, on Hugo.
Oh, I'm definitely cool, yes. Like, it just sort of felt to me like the... I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of characters in that movie that I don't really understand why they're there. The whole Richard Griffiths, like, whatever that whole subplot is. And
right.
Just, like, every scene has got, like, 10 shot reverses between the two kids just mutely, like, winsomely staring at each other. Like, with no dialogue and no... I mean, it just weighs down every beat in that movie, I feel like. And the thing about... I mean, I liked the stuff in the Méliès studio when we finally get there. And, like, the whole weird world of that actually had a kind of energy and a color to me that I agree with Joe. I just thought was, like, missing from the rest of the movie. It sort of felt like one of those issue dramas where I am happy to endorse the sentiment, but I do not want to watch Cry Freedom. And, like, I preserve old movies, but I am not putting up with this. Like, Sacha Baron Cohen, weirdly Zemeckis-looking nonsense. Like, this just seems... I didn't get it at all.
Well, and it's like, it's constantly... I feel like I wouldn't have noticed as much if the movie wasn't constantly asking you, like, you find this mesmerizing, don't you?
Yes.
Like, you're filled with wonder at this, aren't you? And it's sort of constantly asking for your validation, and I couldn't give it back.
I feel like that's what 3D does in general, though. It's like this constant drawing attention to itself, and so then you add that on top of a movie that's already playing that way.
Yeah.
I like Hugo more than you guys, but I get what you're saying. But I can't argue against the 3D. I feel like that is the one thing about it that I feel like is completely great. But I get how if you weren't going with what the movie was trying to tell you, that it might just feel like more kind of chlorine on top of chlorine.
It was the reason to sort of be in that set, which certainly, like, story-wise, like, they had a way, way, way bigger set than they really had anything to do with. And I felt like they kept trying to cook up reasons to be in this giant terminal when they really just needed to be inside the clock. But... I mean, I liked the 3D, but then it gets to a kind of weird place where you want to preserve the magic of Georges Méliès, but then you want to recast all of his old movies in 3D, which feels kind of like the opposite of preserving them. I mean, like, I don't know. Like, it seemed to sometimes be at cross purposes with itself. But I did
Like the colorizing craze for black and white movies.
Yeah, it felt a little bit like that. I mean, like, there might have been like an interesting point to make about not freaking out about technological innovation. But I think it was more just way more mundane moments about, like, you know, when they find that little box of his old drawings on top of the wardrobe cabinet and it takes about 10 minutes to achieve a scene where you already know what's going to happen. But then we watch them all, like, rain down onto the floor from, like, 20 different angles. And it's like, why? Like, this is taking so long. Like,
yeah. Well, and then the automaton matters so much until it doesn't. And
well, yeah, I mean, it's like red herring after red herring.
Yeah.
Or in that movie's case, teal and gold herring. I'm sounding like I hated it, and I actually liked it. I just...
Yeah, I didn't
It's
hate
one
it
of
either.
These movies that sort of took off with critics far beyond what I think its merits are, so then it feels a little weird to say I liked it now.
Right,
yeah.
Well, and I think you've hit on this a lot, Nathaniel, the idea that there's a Hugo versus the artist, and like you can pick one movie about old movies that you like, and people kind of pick Hugo to set themselves apart from the artist.
Right.
Which is a really weird, false comparison to make. I think you've pointed that out too. Even though I think I like the artist less than you, I agree that is silly.
Well, and it's such a contrast as from previous years when we've had two really clear choices that represented two really clear, almost like philosophies of what you want out of a movie. Whereas this year, there's so much overlap between that it starts to become that the either or thing becomes more arbitrary. I feel like I don't understand why the artist people hate the Hugo people and vice versa, where I could understand why if you were a Hurt Locker person, you would not, you know, you were definitely opposed to the Avatar people. And it's always silly, but...
Well, it's like political battles when people get too close to the center.
Yeah.
They get crazier and crazier about, even though the positions aren't that different.
Yeah,
right. Is there a movie in the season that has really surprised you in that you liked it or responded to it a lot more than you expected to? Because I really dug Rampart, and I was not...
Oh, I just saw that, Nick. I totally loved that movie.
Yeah.
Like, that's totally a good call.
Did that get released in New York, or was that only an L.A. release?
It got a week in New York.
Okay, I feel like I remember it screened like twice, and then I just missed it, and now it feels like it's gone.
Well, this year had literally a record number of one-week qualifiers, which, of course, does not make me happy.
Yeah, there have been a lot of
Really?
Them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had...
Well, Extremely Loud is almost like that, isn't it?
Well, no, but that's an open-ended run. But, yeah, it we had a record number of one-week qualifiers. We had 10, and then... We still have a lot of things opening Friday, which is for open-ended runs, which is almost like doing a one-week qualifier.
Right. But yeah, Rampart I liked a lot more than The Messenger, even. And I did enjoy The Messenger. I feel like it was – Harrelson especially was a huge step up and just was a really big surprise for me because I like him, but I feel like he hasn't impressed me in a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. And it was a really cool character study that really did make room for a lot of the side characters as well. There's this kind of fascinating array of women around him, which is sort of plays into his general paranoia about the world, but also women particularly.
Right.
And of course, who better to have if you're feeling paranoid about women to be surrounded by Sigourney Weaver, Anne Heche, Cynthia Nixon, like even Brie Larson feels like, you know, a young version of that kind of, you know, woman, a bad guy is going to be frightened of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in a better world where ensemble awards were given to movies outside of the Best Picture conversation.
Right.
Yes.
I would love to see something like Rampart do well because it...
I too.
I can prove that your shooting was dirty, just like I can prove you dirty.
You can't just walk in the house like you still live here.
You were a dirty cop, and you dirtied all of us up by default.
Have you thought about retirement?
If you force me to retire, I'll have my own show on Fox News inside 1 week. You'll be my first guest.
Say you have thought about it.
In some ways, it erred on the side of being an acting exercise, which I think you could also say about The Messenger.
Mm-hmm. I felt that way about Shame a lot, too, this year.
I mean, I did think Rampart, it actually reminded me a little bit about about Margaret in that it's these sort of like raggedy narratives that are sort of dropping you in with all these really super interesting characters, but there's almost too much going on.
I think I like that.
Is it as raggedy? Is it as raggedy as Margaret?
It is. Like, there's no particular reason for each scene to be the next scene that follows from the one you're watching. Like,
right.
If you're not sort of clued into something about some sort of emotional reaction that you're, I mean, the connections just feel like either they're going to feel intuitive because you're totally in it, or they're just going to feel like they're missing. But I, something about just the photography and the, like, all those, like, every scene, just like those acting choices just felt really specific in a way that I just could not wait to see what we were going to be doing next with those people.
And I love that there's still a sense of excitement to me where it's like, I'll watch a movie, like you said, like you weren't really expecting. I felt like I was just sort of checking off a box on my list of year-end movies to see.
Yeah.
And to be that enthralled by that kind of a movie, it's still so exciting. It's still just...
Okay, I have a quick question. I know Katie needs to go soon. I'm really curious of what people think is supporting actor seems really diffuse to me beyond Plummer and Albert Brooks. And I can't even figure out who's going to win between Christopher Plummer and Albert Brooks.
I think Plummer too.
But doesn't it seems that way, but doesn't Drive have more heat in general?
It does at the moment. I don't feel like it will with the people who are voting for the Oscar, but I feel like Albert Brooks could get his face out there, and if he wins something that lets him make a speech on television, I think he's really charming and I think he's really funny, and it would, I think people just sort of need a reason to remember that we all love him. Like, again, this feels a little bit like The Artist and Hugo, where their appeal is, I mean, their characters could not be more different, obviously, but I feel like the appeal of the actors is similar enough that you're pulling from the same sort of part of the heart with voters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, we're glad we still have you around. Thank you for returning.
Yeah.
That category, speaking of age, that category is skewing even older than best actress.
Yeah.
Although I don't think Maxwell Cito is going
to
do it.
Although Jonah Hill making a run for it. No, I don't think that Maxwell Cito is either.
No.
And then Jonah Hill keeps showing up, and that continues.
I somehow still can't quite believe that's going to happen, but I can't figure out who would replace him. Since everybody seems to be fading. But he's under the radar enough that he's escaping the sort of thing that happened with Natalie Portman and Eddie Murphy, where they have a film no one respects coming out right when voting's happening.
Oh, yeah. He's not high profile enough that anybody...
Yeah, with The Sitter.
I think it's funny.
Yeah.
Am I the only one who finds the Kenneth Branagh nomination to be kind of ridiculous?
That is my absolute pick for, like... the thing I can never remember when I'm trying to remember the nominees in my head, and the, like, why is that happening? But
and I didn't hate the movie or anything, but he was so obviously, like, at cross purposes with what everybody else was doing in a way that Jessica Chastain kind of also is, but Jessica Chastain was delightful. Mm. And
in The Help, you mean?
Yes, in The Help. Sorry, I had to specify as to...
Yeah, I was like, wait, Jessica Chastain's in My Week with Marilyn too?
Yeah. You thought that was Julia Ormond, but it was not.
She played the bathing suit. She became it.
But Kenneth Branagh's movie was the one I wished I was watching. And I think that's why I think of his performance so warmly, because I was grateful he was in it to kind of be a little bit more tongue-in-cheek and kind of deconstruct the myth, as opposed to the rest of the movie, which is just, you know, into propping up the Marilyn.
Yeah, it was just repeating the myth. Yeah,
I want to see the movie about Emma Watson. She was fascinating. I'm so glad we had that subplot.
Brandon was in the movie that was nominated for the Golden Globe for, I don't know. I don't understand him. I really don't understand this Nick Nolte stuff that keeps happening. But then there just doesn't seem like a whole lot of other people who are going to step up and sort of take that. Like,
it's kind of like whenever people get way, way out in front,
it
does always seem to fog the rest of a potential shortlist. Because, like, nobody ends up talking about anyone other than Brooks and Plummer.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then you're like, could someone surprise us, or is it just going to be the expected people?
Yeah, I mean, doesn't that leave room for something like, you know, Brad Pitt to jump in or for Armie Hammer to jump in or something really weird.
Well, I feel like it at least leaves enough room for people to say, hey, I really like that Viggo Mortensen, and I maybe not have even seen that movie, but, you know.
I'll vote for him anyway.
Because he's the best part of that movie, if you're not counting how insane it is to watch Keira Knightley do what she's doing. But it doesn't seem, there's no heat around that movie, but I could see him sneaking in just because they do clearly like him.
Well, yeah. And there's also prosthetics.
That's true.
And that helps.
He
wasn't just acting Sigmund Freud. He became Sigmund Freud.
A cigar is not just a cigar when it's Viggo Mortensen.
Okay, supporting actress.
Yes.
I think, actually, this is the hardest category to predict.
Oh, really? I think it's set.
Yeah.
Seven women who have all the precursors.
Redgrave is out. I feel like she's done.
No, but even if you remove her,
right,
you've still got too many women for five who've done super well in precursors.
Yeah, I guess that is true.
Because you've got Octavia and Jessica from The Help.
Right.
You've got Shailene from The Descendants, Berenice from The Artist, Melissa McCarthy from Bridesmaids,
yeah.
Janet McTeer from Albert Nobbs.
Yeah.
And then you've got two performances that people love enough to put in number one placements that haven't done well, which is Carey Mulligan and Vanessa Redgrave.
That is true.
Carey Mulligan's not going to get it.
She's not.
I mean, I think Carey and Vanessa are probably out. I'm sticking with Melissa McCarthy. I'm just doing it.
But who would she dump out?
Melissa McCarthy?
Vanessa Redgrave.
I don't think she's dumping out anybody.
No, she would have to, because six women have had almost all the precursors.
She would have to dump out either Janet McTeer or Shailene. And I don't think...
But see, I don't think Janet McTeer is going anywhere. She's not a big star, and she keeps getting everything.
She does.
Yeah, I can't really follow that, but I guess people watch Albert Nobbs because of Glenn Close, and they come away caring about Janet McTeer more.
Well, the performance is so much more accessible.
Yeah, well, I mean, I didn't like Albert Nobbs very much, and I did come out kind of thinking about Janet McTeer way more than Glenn Close. So maybe that's how she keeps showing up.
I keep wondering if maybe Berenice Bejo is not going to show up.
You think Harvey's going to let that
show
up?
I still don't quite believe the Melissa McCarthy thing.
I just think there are a lot of people who really love that movie, and there are a lot of people who see a lot of work coming to them from that. You know, for that movie to do well changes things for a lot of people, and so I see a lot of number one placements for that. But
I'm wrong
more than anybody in this podcast. Let history speak.
I could also envision that kind of nomination morning conversation, though, where we talk about how, oh, God, the Oscars don't respect comedy. Like, Melissa McCarthy gets left out, and it becomes sort of that's the Dark Knight question of the day.
It happened for the Golden Globes. She didn't get nominated, which is truly surprising.
That's true. That is surprising. And, I mean, you can't. It's tough to sort of glean voting, you know, intent from the Hollywood Foreign Press, but it is one less venue for her. I mean, I'm sure she's going to be there anyway.
Because they got nominated for Kristen Wiig and for movie.
All right, a mate fell off a cruise ship.
Oh, but I'm back.
Shit.
But
Yeah, oh shit. Took a hard, hard, violent fall, kind of pinball down. Hit a lot of railings, broke a lot of shit. I'm not gonna say I survived, I'm gonna say I thrived. I met a dolphin down there, and I swear to God, that dolphin looked not at me, but into my soul, into my goddamn soul, Annie, and said, I'm saving you, Megan. Not with his mouth, but he said it, I'm assuming telepathically. We had a connection that I don't even know if I can, hey, shut my mouth, look at this. Unbelievable. You must be Annie's fella.
I just feel, I guess I'm the only ones I'm ironclad certain on in that category are Spencer and Jessica Chastain.
But see, Jessica Chastain, couldn't she theoretically split her own vote?
Theoretically, yes. In practice, I don't think she would. Because the one she's...
You think they'll all just line up behind The Help?
She's so likable. It's clearly by far her most likable role.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the only one that's going to be in the Best Picture conversation. I mean, I guess Tree of Life could show up on, you know, in, at the bottom of the top seven or whatever they take.
I'm just sort of wondering if The Help is going to be one of those movies that, that sort of wakes up on nomination morning and finds out people didn't like it nearly as much as we're thinking that they did. Like, and I'm kind of right in the middle, I think, of opinions about that movie, but it just seems like there's a whole lot of stuff attached to it, and once you get past people agreeing, even people who don't like the movie agreeing or feeling forced to agree that Viola Davis is great in it, yeah. I just am wondering how strong their allegiance is, because I don't really see the writers going for it, I don't really see the directors going for it, the craft people are going to have a tough time, so I think it's probably all actors, but I don't know how much actors are going to love the kind of clashing of styles in that film, or...
See, I think that's a movie that is, like, teed up for the actors to love. I feel like that's going to be
and also,
winner.
And actors are a third of the voters.
Well, sure.
Or something like that.
You're talking about how the Kevin screener won't go in. I mean, I watched The Help with my family a couple days ago, and it's so easy to rewatch and so enjoyable to rewatch. Like, it, revisiting it only, I think, heightens it when you look back at it again.
Especially because you get all the Miss Myrna tips. I mean, you know I agree with you. Yes.
I learned so much to cook my Christmas dinner.
Do we glean much from Shailene Woodley getting left off of the SAG list? That seems like the snub that could matter, because SAG matters.
Well, my opinion is of that is colored by the fact that I don't understand why she's winning anything.
Yes.
Well, I think she's clearly best in showing that. She's clearly the one who sort of rises above everybody else in terms of making an impression.
Well, I would agree with you for like the first 20 minutes where she gets to have the personality that we're told she has, but then
right.
for like the remaining hour and a half as she becomes docile and like I agree less.
Yeah,
I just don't, like, I think she's perfectly serviceable in the movie, but I'm a little confounded with the fact that she's actually been winning Critics Awards.
Yeah. No, I agree. And she's not, it's not the kind of young girl performance that gets nominated. She's not a de facto lead. She's not, you know, cute and adorable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's not Winter's Bone, like, wow, she's wise
right.
beyond her years. Yeah.
Right, exactly. It's a true supporting performance in terms of the function of the role. And I feel like young performers do better when you're a, oh shit, what was her name? True Grit.
Oh, Haley.
Yes,
her, yes. God, who could have expected that I would have forgotten that name in a year's time? I don't know. So, I mean, I guess she seems like she's in there because The Descendants is such, you know, a favorite in that movie, or in the Oscar race.
Mm-hmm.
But if she did get left off, I feel like there would be reason.
Yeah.
I'm praying for an About Schmidt outcome with that movie. Just that was definitely a, like, everybody woke up. I mean, that kind of happened with Sideways, too. Like, neither one of them pulled down everything
that people were expecting. That's true.
Yeah, that the other groups had given them. And it definitely seems like its box office is kind of slowing at a weird moment. And
yeah.
I think of all these movies, like, I mean, I get it that I like it the least, so I'm sure I'm biased in that way. But, like, when I hear people who love Hugo say why they love it, or several of these other movies that there are disagreements about, I totally get what the other case is, even if I just don't feel it myself. But
yeah.
I just haven't read the article or the review of The Descendants that makes me at all understand how it's achieved the prominence that it has. Like, I just don't even see the movie there.
I will fight you on The Descendants at some point.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
You're bringing up fighting words, and now I have to leave. That's totally unfair.
See how I tried to do that?
No, I know. So next time we shall meet again and
all right.
Check this out.
And you're gonna come with your Darth Maul double-sided lightsaber, right? All right.
In 3D.
No, I'm gonna come armed with Robert Forster. He's gonna punch the hell out of you.
Okay.
That was as raggedy as Rampart or Margaret.
How dare you?
But as Roland.
Yes.
And thanks, guys, thanks for you know, going along with my schedule.
Yeah.
I hope we can do this again soon.
Okay, bye, Katie.
Okay, bye, everybody.
Bye.
And then we also had Nick.
Hello, goodbye. Extremely loud and incredibly close.
And Joe?
Joe, your own personal Iron Lady.
Bye.